Hello, this is your host, Paul Harvey, at Life, Passion and Business. I realise I put this at the end of the programme most of the time, and I also realise I don't often listen to the end of podcasts. So I thought about telling you here before we get started. So the first thing is, this podcast is not supported in any way. We have no sponsorship. So if you would like to support us, do check out the Buy Me a Coffee link on this podcast app, and you'll also find it at the website. Okay, before I take you to the podcast, I want to give you a little bit of a reminder about the power of focus and accountability. This is the one tool that will really get you towards the goals you are seeking, towards the path you want to take. So listen to the end to find out more, or check out the link in the show notes. Anyway, let's get you back to the podcast. My name is Paul Harvey, and you are listening to Life, Passion and Business, a podcast born out of my desire to find greater meaning in life at the time when I thought there was none. Since that day, I have spoken to hundreds of people, and what I have discovered is that our story is everything. Because what we do, feel or experience is based on the stories that we tell ourselves. It's time to explore what it means to live a good life. How do we make this experience better? And more importantly, how do we lead the world to a better place?
So I got that feeling of caring, and the feeling that came from caring was what I called peace, because I said, this is not happiness, because happiness is that feeling you get when, you know, you get a new girlfriend or you get a new car, or, you know, you had a nice meal or something like that. It wasn't happiness. I said, what is this wonderful feeling I'm having while I'm caring?
My guest on the show today was 19 when he enlisted in the US Coast Guard Reserve as a hospital corpsman trainee. He was sent to Government Island in San Francisco Bay to help and care for the troops returning from Vietnam and the Mekong Delta. Yes, it dates him, the 1970s, when he was 19 and a very young man. It was a life-changing event for him. He discovered how caring and peace are fundamentally connected, and it set him on a career path in the caring profession, not as a nurse or a doctor, but as a planner. He went on to becoming a planning and design consultant and facilitate innovative management operations and new facility development for more than 120 hospitals across the USA. His skill set was in demand outside the US, and him and his wife traveled the world advising hospitals and care facilities. All of his work was about creating environments for optimal patient and staff care. Over his 40-year career, he set up facilities all over the world, working in Vietnam, Nigeria, Kenya, and many other countries. He was particularly proud of his work in Myanmar, where he created systems to serve remote communities. Jeff is now retired from the business that he created, and he spends his time writing and speaking on podcasts and on stages. He believes that humanity needs to have a second evolution, one that leads to a deep peace that can only be found through caring for each other. We cover my usual questions in our conversation, but it's more about the human bond of caring and community. It's about how society must learn from its past and stop repeating our history. Jeff has encapsulated his thoughts on caring and on peace in his first book, To Care for Peace, a global mandate to secure the second human evolution in perpetuity. The process is in the solution. In his opinion, it is a process. So let's join the conversation with Jeff Hardy.
Where did it begin? Well, I guess it began when I was born, and I'm not going to bore everybody about that part. But when I was a teenager, 19 years old, I joined the United States Coast Guard Reserves as a hospital corpsman trainee. And it was during the Vietnam War. I was stationed in the San Francisco Bay on Government Island, and we had an infirmary, and we were getting a lot of sick and wounded men, soldiers, seamen from the Mekong Delta, and from, you know, there were some really weird diseases. There were some really weird snake bites, not as much injury as strange sicknesses that we were dealing with. But I had an experience at the age of 19 of caring. I was paid as a hospital corpsman, not a whole lot of money. I mean, it didn't matter. I mean, I was in the military, and so I was paid military rates to care. And what a deal, it was wonderful working with the soldiers. They were so grateful. They were different guys than I was used to dealing with all my life, because they were the same guys I'm used to dealing with all my life, but they were different in that they let their guy guards down and opened up and said, "This hurts."
Well, indeed. I guess Vietnam was harsh, and they saw a lot, and it shifted their perspective. And obviously, a lot of them, the ones that could, opened up and started talking about it.
I'd say that's an understatement too, because some of the stories I heard were just unbelievable. And you watch Armageddon now.
Hello, it's Editing Paul here. I think Jeff meant Apocalypse Now, a gruesome film.
And that was nothing in comparison to what these guys were telling us stories about. Just unbelievable. So I got that feeling of caring, and the feeling that came from caring was what I called peace, because I said, "This is not happiness," because happiness is that feeling you get when you get a new girlfriend, or you get a new car, or you had a nice meal or something like that. It wasn't happiness. I said, "What is this wonderful feeling I'm having while I'm caring?" And it was, I just called it peace. And peace before that to me was, it was after the war. It was a time after war. Nobody was shooting and killing each other. Or the time between wars. Nobody was killing each other, And then it was sitting on top of a mountain and looking down in the valley at all the people who were suffering. But because I'm up on the top of the mountain, I've got my arms crossed and my legs crossed, and I'm singing some spiritual song. But that's not peace either. The peace that I discovered when I was in the Coast Guard is something that gradually got me to thinking that this is something that other people feel. But I only realized that when I worked all over the United States as a hospital planner for designing new hospitals, planning management and operations, and working a lot with nurses. These nurses, they already knew how to care for peace. It was just an unbelievable feeling to realize that, oh, wait a minute, this feeling of peace is something that it does require sharing. It does require another person or other people. So that's where the whole idea of care for peace came. And it was only after the Care for Peace organization, the nonprofit organization that I started in Myanmar to help build a community development and health center in a very, very rural area, did I realize that this is something that we really need to extrapolate, to expand to what we do with everybody all over the world. And after Myanmar, it was an incredibly successful project, but the military came in and had a coup, and that wiped out the democracy that was there when we were there. And so I had nothing to do but write a book. So I wrote a book, and that's the book called Care for Peace, A Global Mandate to Secure the Second Human Evolution in Perpetuity. And it's like it all began in the Coast Guard, and that wonderful experience of caring, active caring, for the dynamic peace that occurs while you care. It's not a place. It's not sitting up on top of the mountain or between two wars. It's a feeling. Peace is a feeling.
Is this
And
something that only works between like the carer and the caree, or is this something more akin to community, as in works when you're in a group of people?
absolutely, it does. And thank you for the question, because it's if you bring it, other people who know what it is, just intuitively, it's part of our nature. Caring for peace is part of our nature. And so, and I have had meetings, I've presented, I've been a speaker at conventions and seminars and things, and I can I can talk with a whole audience about this, and I can see people in the audience in the very back nodding. It's like you can see this rhythm that comes from people who understand what it means to care for peace, because this is not even close to rocket science. This is just human nature. We know how to do it. And your question is pregnant, because it's something that we need to use to expand this concept to the rest of the world through group meetings, through group understanding. And I just experienced a lot, especially in meetings in the healthcare arena. A lot of people are caregivers. They aren't nurses. They're caregivers, or they're teachers, or they're plumbers. They're, architects, even. It's something that is in the nature of everybody.
I'm
And the
reminded of a
more.
story that I heard about one of the presidents, one of the American presidents who had heard, and he couldn't understand why people who were taken from the tribes, or people who were abducted by the tribes and later released, all wanted to get back to be within the tribes. They didn't want the guns, the Bibles, and the other things that civilization had to offer. They wanted to get back to the tribe because they felt cared for. It was the one place they felt cared for.
I mean, if you look at a divorced couple that splits, and then the kids are living with this one for a while, and then this one for a while, the kids end up wanting to stay with the ones that care for them, the one that really cares about them. I mean, we gravitate toward care. Isn't that really what your message is?
Well,
Is it?
that's the point, isn't it? I mean, I think, in terms of how society's gone, we've gone from this individualism to such a point that we're becoming so isolated from everything else around us. And whereas when we care for another person, suddenly we've made a connection which is more powerful, with a stronger bond than anything else, because you're caring for someone, you're making their life better.
I think caring up it, being able to care about peace, and then you care for peace, and then you take care of peace. I mean, there's all sorts of things that we have to think about while we're thinking about what does care mean?
Indeed, indeed. And so, how long have you been doing this since you were 19, by the sounds of it?
And I was very fortunate. The journey has been so rewarding. I left the Coast Guard and immediately got a job as the lowest paid ward clerk in an emergency room at a Kaiser hospital in Sacramento while I was putting myself through the rest of college. And just working with the nurses and working with the doctors and the administrators. And I have something in my spirit that is so embedded. And it's ADHD and high energy. It's like, someone asked me to do something, I'd say, how can I help and how high? And so I got a reputation in this hospital for, hey, Paul Hardy, man, he's right there right away. When you ask him to do something, he doesn't say, well, let me think about it. Let me prioritize that. He actually jumps up and does what it is you want to have done. I mean, I still do that. I'm still that. My wife can come into the office and say, hey, would you do something? And it doesn't matter what I'm doing, I hop up and help her. I mean, it's like, and so that energy, that spirit drove me all the way through the Kaiser system until I was finally traveling all over the world with my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, designing hospitals, excuse me, helping and design hospitals during the pre-planning and the planning process, because as a planner, I ended up getting buttonholed, which I'm glad I got buttonholed as the person who could come in and help facilitate the process. And that's that's what I do. I facilitate process.
So you weren't
I'm the
medically
front
trained.
cover
You're
of my.
not someone that handles medicine at the sharp end.
No.
You're more of a you're on the administration side, the organizational side.
That's correct. Now, when I was in the Coast Guard, I mean, they had me changing dressings and handing out medications and giving shots. That's as close as I ever got to actually providing health care. And then afterwards, when I was working with architects, I had a whiteboard and felt tip pens saying, here's where you design a hospital so that it's nursing focused, not patient focused. The nurses are already patient focused. You got to take care of the nurses. Here's how you do it. And I just draw little squiggles on the whiteboard. And here's how you can design a hospital so that you don't have individual silos of departments. You want to be able to have one administrative center that the patient comes in and they say their name once. They don't have to say their name every single time they go from one silo department to the next. So it's like I had a whole bunch of ways of designing a hospital so that it was efficient and effective and nursing focused. And just that alone got me in all these meetings with big owners like Columbia HCA, Kaiser, of course, Catholic Healthcare, West, Adventist Sunbelt. These are huge hospital-owning organizations where I would show the architects, here's how you design a hospital, and then they'd go out and draw with their straight lines. I can't draw a straight line. You know, they're they can draw straight lines. So yeah, it's my trajectory was from my spirit, but that spirit began with the care for peace, and then it was supported by the energy that I came into this life, and that's where the birth part comes in. You know, I was born with this energy that, you know, my parents, God rest them, you know, they had to deal with my energy all my life, at least during the first
So,
half.
did you even want
But
to be in the care industry when you were a child, when you were younger? I mean, so you got into this at 19, but were you any interested in that before?
I think my parents wanted me to be something, I think, like an architect. When I went to
Well, you
the
got close to
Unitarian,
architecture. You got close.
no, in fact, my company was bought out by an architecture firm. So because I was teaching architects and they says, wow, you can come and teach all of our architects how to design a hospital. And
So you started a company building hospitals, basically designing hospitals.
the company began with as a one man. It was just me, and I was helping hospitals with their record storage and records retention program. You wouldn't believe all the paperwork all over hospitals. And so I would go in and do records retention program. And the administrators loved it because the administrator's office had stacks and stacks of boxes. They didn't know what to do with them. They had a company come once a year to take all these boxes out and tend to take them to a storage facility. And so all these hospitals in the world have these huge storage facilities that they're paying for. And it's like, so I helped clear that mess. That was my first big job. And then because of that, the owners of the hospital, the administrators would take me out to lunch and say, wow, what else do you do? And then I'd tell them about my Coast Guard experience and how when I was working with Kaiser, and my wife and I traveled to Curacao or Bahrain, and we helped design them. And they'll say, well, you know what? We've got a new facility that I'd like you to take a look at the blueprints. And so I'm sitting there thinking, I gotta look at blueprints. And boy, do I have stories about looking at blueprints, because I to this day, I think some of the stuff that they write on blueprints, I don't understand, especially when I was down in Curacao, and some of the blueprints they showed me were in Spanish or Portuguese. I saw some that were in Portuguese. So I had to guess, oh, that's an operating room. It must be an operating room because there are little boxes around this central area. Well, guess what? I was looking at an administrative unit. That was the center. That was the different administrators that were also. I mean, it was just too funny. Too funny.
Yeah. So it sounds like you had a good journey with this business.
Oh my God. I just, you know, the journey. And where it went and how it helped me raise two boys and have a wonderful wife who did stay home and didn't travel over so that I could travel all over the world, and work in Nigeria and Vietnam and some of the places after the war, of course. And then I decided to start a nonprofit organization. And I say I decided. I had some very wonderful people helping me right here in Marin County, California, and helping plan this whole idea of going to a country that was so much a deep rural company and country. And that's Myanmar. That's Burma. Let's see, where's Burma? Burma is, it's right there. That's where Burma is. It's between Thailand and India, Thailand and Pakistan, excuse me, Bangladesh, China, let's see, Cambodia, Laos. There's a whole bunch of countries that are around Thailand, excuse me, around Myanmar. But Myanmar is as big as Germany and Italy combined, and yet the number of roads in the rural area during the monsoon, they're all wiped out anyway. So at any rate, we went there. We built a community development and health center prototype so that we could take this prototype and use it as a showcase and a place to teleconnect it to other 250 more of these throughout the country. And it was absolutely awesome. By the way, the center is still going. It's even better than we left it. They are doing, the people in the village just really, they grabbed a hold of it and they made it much more than I even envisioned,
So
which
are
is
these
my,
health centers? What actually are they?
I'm sorry?
Is it a health center? What does the center provide?
They, okay. Mostly basic health screening and basic primary care, we would call it, up to a little level of secondary care. In other words, if a patient comes in and has a cut, we can stitch the patient up. There is a birthing center inside, as in, sounds like a big thing. It's one room with a birthing bed. And we have a doctor and two nurses and one midwife. And the midwife has a motorcycle outside that the Rotary in Myanmar, the Yangon Yo Rotary Club, bought so that these nurses who were on motorcycles could get to their patients on time. So we called it the just-in-time midwife program. So my wife and I watched that show on television, the call the midwife, and I always thought that, hey, we could do one for the Asian community and call it the just-in-time midwife program, because the people who are out there in the boonies, by the time a runner comes to the
course.
center and tells the midwife, and then the midwife has to trudge on where trails or not on trails through the mud and the slog to get to the baby's already been born. So, now they can get to where the babies are going to be born. So it's just an absolutely
Because
wonderful experience.
Myanmar have gone through a real difficult few years, haven't they, with their military takeover.
Oh, all the time. I mean, Myanmar's been a mess. I mean, and you got China constantly coming down and stripping the forests. I mean, and you got, the only thing that I would say is benefit is that these wonderful people have a spirit to them that is indefatigable. It's a strong, soft spirit. And most of the countries that I go to, I can get a feel for the people. And this was a new feel to me. It was a guttural feel of what, just such a gentle people. And yes, there were some things that were not gentle. And the whole problem with the Muslim community, the Rohingya, that was a very ugly process that was going on while I was there, only about 200 miles away from where our clinic was. And I had to let the country know and the good people know that at no point would we promote anything other than you take care of every single person who walks in this clinic. I don't care if they're red, blue, green, black, purple, and I don't care if they're Muslim or Christian. we will take care of them. And they had to agree with that. And, you know, they must have, there were some there who were swallowing real deep when I said that, because, you know, they were saying, oh, we aren't going to take care of those Muslims. You know, they're horrible people. And, you know, I mean, there are Buddhists and then there are Buddhists. It's a very Buddhist country. But the Buddhists that we worked with were absolutely wonderful people. They,
I had no sense that Buddhism had any space for that kind of aggression.
I don't think that the space can be allocated to any one religion. I think that's something that is part of a part of human nature. And it's one of the things that I believe in, and that is that don't deny human late nature because it's going to bite you. You better recognize human nature and then learn how to deal with it because that's the whole process of civilizing. It's civilization. We need to be civil people. And that's part of our nature, but so is obviously killing. I mean, you know, protecting our own. I mean, going out and stealing food if the only way we're going to get food is to steal for it. You know, I mean, there are things that are just in our nature that I think, in a general sense, around the world, we're winning. I really do. I think that the difficulties that are occurring because there are problems in
Well,
the
while we're
world
making this,
where.
there are two major conflicts going on, and we're not certainly not winning in those situations
Exactly.
at the moment. And they are
Yes.
vicious and nasty and bloody and just generally wrong, really. But yeah, and you say it's human nature again. There is something about this idea of this is my tribe and those are not, those are others. And when they're others, then they're no longer human and we can do what we like to them. So unfortunately,
Yes.
that's this
Yes.
the dehumanization that we go through. Yes.
Yeah,
So,
no,
what
that's
are
a
you
good
up
point.
to? What are you up to today? You've got your book that you're promoting. Are you still working for the company? Are you still involved?
No. I retired and I am in full retirement. I write, I speak, I like being a guest on podcasts because Paul, what you're doing is something I feel with your brethren out there, you're all the other, what I'm calling you guys, the global podcasters. You're not teaching people how to cook. You're not podcasting how to ride a bike. You know, you're global podcast. You're focused on climate change, environmental, population, demilitarization, just taking care of the earth. I mean, you're a specific kind of podcaster that extends far and wide worldwide. And I think that you're sitting in the chair now because I don't think that our leaders are getting it. So we need to have people like you spread the word. Now, if I can digress to a big subject, may I allow me
Help
to,
yourself.
the whole idea that I say in the front cover of the book is to care for peace, a global mandate to secure the second human evolution in perpetuity. I was driving a car, excuse me, I was in a taxi cab, an air-conditioned taxi cab, driving from New Delhi to Agra. I was all alone in the back of the taxi cab. Cab driver was driving. I could hear the air conditioner, but I couldn't hear what's going on outside, but there weren't any horns honking. I was in traffic jam the whole way, and it was just inch by inch in this drive. And I realized while I was driving that this isn't just one little traffic jam. This is the whole country, at least from my perception there. And it's there that I realized that, wait a minute, we have procreated ourselves into a box. What's the deal? And at that moment, I came up with this thought that this whole human evolution thing that started 2.5 million years ago is over. And I was wondering, when did it actually end? And where are we now? And where are we going? And I think that's when I realized that we have to be in charge of designing, planning. Here I am, the planner, the second human evolution. And the first human evolution, I decided, among myself without any help from anybody, which is good because it means that anybody could come in and change it the way they want, ended mid-60s or somewhere between the 50s and the 60s, and especially when the mutually assured destruction occurred. It really didn't occur, it just, you know,
The
we
potential
suddenly
arrived, didn't it?
realized,
Potential
you
arrived,
know,
didn't it?
yeah, it's just like, oh, look, we could wipe ourselves out. We control, humans controlled nature. We were the keystone animal, okay? We were the one that was in charge of everything, and not just the animals, but the vegetation and the earth and the skies and the seas and the land. We were in charge. That's what happened between the 50s and the 60s. It either happened sometime between then or not after, but maybe a little before. I don't know. At any rate, now we are in what I call the suspended human evolution because we got these two wars going. Huh? What the heck? What are these guys doing? Now, didn't we learn something? Did they go to school? Did they
Yeah, we're
see
still
what
fighting
happened?
over land, aren't we? That's the main
That's
dispute.
right.
Still fighting
That's right.
over territory again.
Yes, and we're killing women and babies. I'm
No.
sorry, and men too. I mean, you know, we're killing humans. Why are we doing that? We're destroying what we've built. What's going on here? And it's people like you who are going to be, it's your job. You guys, you global podcasters, man, get the word out. You know, and especially if we can define that the first human evolution is over. We're in the suspended human evolution, and we can get people talking about that and realizing that it is the suspended human evolution where we better start the pre-planning process. Ah, here I am, a planner, talking once again about planning, because planning isn't like, oh, let's just go build a hospital, because believe me, I've gone and seen architecture drawings when I was invited way too late to help them design a hospital. And it's too late because they didn't do their pre-planning right. They didn't determine whether they needed anything, much less a hospital in that spot. And, you know, usually they'd build it and then it would go under, and then they get a new administrator who said that he could fix it, and then they'd have to get another new administrator and say that it's like, you know, if you don't pre-plan, which includes the approach to planning, that's even the approach to
Well, you've got to
pre-planning.
know what you want to achieve, haven't you, really?
Yes,
You've
it
got to
is.
have a target, what you want to achieve. You know, a shiny hospital is one thing, but a shiny hospital that does something is quite useful.
Touche, touche. Yeah, it's something that, yeah, that you have to approach it without having it so set in your mind what you're going to have in the end. And that's the biggest problem. You know, I want the piano over there. Well, what are you talking about a piano for? You don't even have a house yet. It's like, you know.
I mean, it is interesting. I mean, we have got to the stage in our development. I mean, it's Noah Yuval Harari puts it quite well, and he's written a book called Sapiens and a couple of other books, and he puts it quite well
Yes.
in one of those when he says that humanity have become gods. We have the
Yes.
power of gods, and we
Yes.
don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And that is the
Great
problem.
book.
We've got all this power, but we've no
Yeah.
idea how to apply it.
I love that book, by the way. I only learned that it existed when I found out that it was Barack Obama's favorite book.
Oh.
So just yeah, great stuff.
So how do you define success in your life? I mean, clearly there has been times when success meant building a hospital, but what does success mean to you nowadays?
I don't know. The process is a solution. That's on the front cover of my book. The process is the solution. AT&T's the system is a solution. That is so wrong. So, you know, the system is the end of a long process, and it better be a good one, because I could put the word hospital, you know, the hospital is the solution. And I can tell you, I know more hospitals that are not the solution. So the process, you've got to be looking at the process. And when I think about what it is that I call success, I think success is the ability to be in a process that is working for you.
Yes.
It's got to work for you. And it's got to be something that you are visceral attached to, but standing back enough that you can detach yourself. And that's a very difficult thing to do because we bring our opinions to everything. And you look at the war between the people who are for abortion and people who are against abortion. Don't get involved in any of those. Those are opinion wars, and opinions kill really great discussions. When you have a pre-planning process and you want to be successful, you do everything you can to avoid the opinion pileup, which happens a lot of times. And sometimes when I'm in these pre-planning meetings, I got to back everybody up. I say, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. You guys are still talking about what it is you think you're going to have. And we are not there. We're not there. We haven't even dealt with this problem that we're having with this new payment structure that the patients aren't going to have the type of money that you're used to having coming into your hospital. We've got to be thinking about that. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that I have to deal with where success is not the result. We better have a successful process. So I hope that answers your question. That's my definition of success now, then, and in the future.
Yeah. I mean, the point about this conversation, and Berman, this is that life, passion, and business is all about your personal journey. It's all about your method for doing life. That's all this is about. It's about what you found successful or what you defined as successful. So there's no right or wrong to this, from my perspective, because I think we each have to find our own answers to these questions. Because we're all individual. We are individual. Although we live in a collective, we all are in the day individuals. We can only control what we think about and what we do. That's the only power we actually have.
Touché.
So contribution's quite a good one. I mean, where do you see you contributed to the world?
Well, I mean, I can only contribute to the world that is around me. When I was doing a lot of work in healthcare, I was writing articles. I was very well known by the words "no hidden patient" because I didn't want to see any more hospitals being designed like hotels where they had long corridors where patients were hidden in rooms down the end of the corridor. I wanted hospitals to be designed more like intensive care units where the patients' rooms surrounded the nursing unit. And I learned a lot. I learned so much from the hospitals that I went to. And there was a hospital in Glendale, California, that has an ICU and a CCU, an intensive care, and a cardiac care unit right next to each other. And both of them had like these big tables in the center, not counters where nurses sat behind counters and looked at people who came up to the counter. No, these were tables so that the nurse and the doctor and the patient, you know, people would sit opposite each other while they're talking. And let's say you are right now a nurse sitting on the other side of the table from me. And, oh, hey, Paul, the patient that's in the room behind you just took out his trach, or at least looks like he's taking his trach out. You know, let's stop talking and you can just turn around and go help that patient. I mean, the idea of giving the nurses the opportunity to get to the end of their shifts without their feet just hurting like heck, without their backs hurting like heck. As I say, I was into nursing focused. In fact, I wrote an article or I was interviewed, I can't remember, by the AARCP, that's the Respiratory Therapy Association. It's a wonderful group of people. And because they were the ones in charge of all those O2 tanks all over. And so they were up front right when difficulties happened and regular O2. And then, you know, they started not having the tanks. They ended up having the oxygen being brought in through pipes to every room at any rate. But for a long time, they were the masters of the O2 canisters and had to have the right place to put them. And I'd see hospitals that were built that didn't have any place to put the O2 containers. It's just, you know, I'm sorry, I digress.
Yes.
But no hidden patient. That was one. Nursing focus. That was another one. Actually designing a patient administration area in a small hospital where all the administrative work of the hospital would be done. Instead of having a medical records department, an admitting department, a patient accounting department, an administrator's office department, you'd have tons and tons of people. I say, no, put them all in one cluster. And they loved it. We did it to a, in a small hospital down in Morgan Hill, California. And I mean, I literally designed the hospital on a whiteboard because at the time they didn't have a certified architect helping. They had a young junior architect, a wonderful young man who l learned a lot from my drawings, proceeded to draw the hospital, and we ended up using about maybe 15% of the people in the administrative area that we would normally have had to have a lot of people in these silo departments. But the people in this patient administration department loved it because they could do everything. They could admit a patient, they could help a patient who was going to the laboratory, to the pharmacy, the radiology department, and go up to the floor. And the patients loved it because they didn't have to say their name 50 times.
Of
They could
course.
say their name once. So I was really known for that too. So I was a process guy for a long time. And I'm still a process guy because I'm trying to help the world. Yes, I am trying to help the world. I have delusions of adequacy here. And that maybe something I say just might resonate. And as a planner, I think that if I can share the simple planning tools, which include care for peace, that's a planning tool because it's already there. And the first human evolution, the suspended human evolution, and the second human evolution of that should like be obvious to anybody. And the only thing I want to hear is, well, I think the first human evolution has started. Ended a really long time before that. Go ahead, let's argue about that. So the key is I want to share this process, the idea that the process is a solution, and it's the journey might be the award. The journey might be the reward, but the process is the solution. Because if you want to have a really good journey, then there's a process to
There is
that.
indeed. So, how do you contribute to yourself?
I care for my peace. I care for the peace of my wife and my children and my grandchildren. And I care for the peace of the people I meet and talk with. I care for you, Paul.
Well, that's
And I
me. How
care.
do you care for yourself?
I exercise.
Good.
Swimming. Swimming. I walk with my wife. I sit in the hot tub with my wife every single morning.
Nice.
And I talk with her. We talk. And we have agreements and disagreements and arguments and lovely conversations and not lovely conversations, because every day is different. Every morning is different. We talk about our kids a lot. And we talk about, our upcoming trip to Ireland, and just and her parents who are 90s, they're 91 and 92. And so we talk about them. So that's how I take care of myself. Now, Paul, how do you take care of yourself?
Every day I have a process when I get up. So I write, I will always exercise, I run a lot, I have certain nutritional things I do. So yes, I've got quite a lot of processes I do to keep myself healthy. That's part of it, really.
How do
But
you care for the peace of other people around you?
I am a bit of a carer, really. I'm kind of like, I think it's, my thing is cooking for people, I guess, really.
Ooh, I love it. Yes.
So moving to our final question that we have for our guests, really, is this: what's the meaning of it all? Why are we doing all this?
Yes, there is an answer. At least one of the many answers, but my
Yes.
answer is the first sentence of my book. To care for peace is, well, no, wait a minute. Let me just read it because it's
This
a
is that question, isn't it? The question of why we get up in the morning, why we do what we do. It's the meaning thing. So for some people that can be God, that can be no God, that can be a combination in between. There's, it's this thing about what is our innate driver.
Okay, I'm going to read this because it's only one sentence long.
Okay.
To care for peace may not be the secret of life, but it is as close to the secret of living there is. I repeat, to care for peace may not be the secret of life. Because you asked me, what's the meaning of it all? Well, may not be the secret of life, but it's as close to the secret of living there is.
Nice. Thank you.
That's my answer. Thank you, Paul.
So we're coming to the end of our time together, and what is it that you want people to do after they listen to this podcast? Buy your book, of course, is a good one.
I don't know. I honestly don't care if they buy my book at all. It's really a calling card. I give them away to my friends. If you were here, I'd be giving one to you. I mean, I honestly don't care if people buy the book. Frankly, all they have to do is go to Amazon and they can actually read the front cover. And right there on Amazon, they can read everything I wrote on the back cover. Okay. Because frankly, if they just get that and start talking about it, use it as a talking point, because in the book, I've got templates. I've got four templates, and those templates are what you can use to help yourself care for peace, what you can help with your relationships, and what you can help with your organization. So I get into a lot of detail in the book. And, if you're not ready for the detail, don't buy the book. I mean, I'm shooting. My goal is to be able to have some kind of a program on NPR or PBS or whatever, where I have about seven or eight series where I can take each one of the templates and present them in a discussion format so that I have some people actually joining me on the proverbial stage so that I can get other people's ideas. I don't want to be the person who does much more than bring the issue, the discussion topic, because I want people to understand that dynamic that we really need that you are promoting as a global podcaster. So what people need to do is I mean, if they actually watch this and listen to this, take what we've talked about and share it and put it into your own words. It doesn't have to be in my words, put it in your own words and talk about it with the people you meet. You'll go to a party, talk about it with them when get it into your own spirit so that you can have a discussion with other people. And while you're doing that, try to enjoy the visceral and backing up because opinions are not, they're not able to help in these discussions.
No.
Well, I believe in this. I don't, believing in something is not important right now. What we have to do is take what we know. There's a population program. There's a problem. There's a migration problem all over the world, from the north of Africa to Mexico. I mean, and Canada, going south. I mean, there are populations, and the migration population problem is just changing the culture all over the world. So, there's a lot of things that we've got to talk about, but opinions are not helping.
No.
Opinions are not. You have to talk about issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if they want to get in touch with you, how would they find you?
I'm just Jeff at careforpeace.org, careforpeace.org.
And do you have a website as
And
well?
yeah, careforpeace.org.
Okay. That's simple
It's
enough.
just, yeah.
Are you on social
So,
media at all?
I know I have a Facebook page and then, what is it? LinkedIn,
Okay.
but I don't use them. I'm into being a guest on podcast specifically with global podcasters,
Lovely. Okay.
and that's really my focus right now. I need to stay focused.
All those links will be available at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com.
Paul, thank you so much
So, Jeff,
for
thank you so
being.
much for taking the time and having this conversation. It's been a fantastic journey with you. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much.
All the best.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Jeff Hardy. If you'd like to read the book, you can find it on Amazon. It's called The Care for Peace. You can also catch up with Jeff directly at his website, which is careforpeace.org. Do check out the book because it's full of various templates that will support you in the process. As for Jeff himself, he doesn't do social media, so if you want to get in touch with him, do check out his website, which is careforpeace.org. Okay, as I mentioned at the beginning, now is the time to discover how to find some more focus in your life and get things done. Okay, so we're all looking to move forward. We all want to find some measure of success in the world. And if you've heard the podcast, you know I have a view of success, but that's another conversation. But the point is, however you look at this, we want to get things done. You might want to get a project over the line. You might have a really big goal that you're looking to move forward on. And the problem is, whenever we start these projects, whenever we do anything like this, there's always some resistance. There's always something that gets in the way. And that can be a multitude of things. But the key to this is, how do we retain focus and stay with the project and push it over the line? And that's where focus coaching can help. Now, it's a process that I discovered some 15 years ago during my coach training, and it's something sometimes called focus coaching, turbo coaching, speed coaching, and it's a really simple process where we define what it is you're trying to achieve, and we look at the resistance that you're experiencing in that achievement, come up with some strategies to solve that resistance, commit to setting a date, and I hold your feet to the fire to make sure that you do that. So there's a commitment, there's an accountability process, and that's it. That's basically how it works. You get it done. And I can tell you, it is so powerful when you start working in this way, particularly when you work with someone who supports you in the process of doing it. And one thing to remember, you know, success is never guaranteed, but the struggle always is. And that's what this coaching is designed to do. It's designed to get you through the struggle towards the success you're looking for. So do check out the link on this podcast or at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. You will find a video of me again explaining this process. But if you go below the video, there's a booking link where we'll have a discussion about your project and how we could get you sorted. As always, if you have enjoyed this podcast, if you found anything here of any use, please share it with a friend, because that's how people like yourself find good podcasts. If you can, give us a review. Give us a 5-star review. I have to ask for 5 stars. Why not? I think I'm worth it. When you support a podcast in that way, you have no idea how effective it is, both in terms of supporting us on the platform, but it also makes us feel good. Yes, it makes me feel good, and I like to feel good. As always, thank you for your time and attention. I will catch you next time.